Decades ago, George Bush the First threatened to bring forth a new world order. Bush the Second made it real. This is the foreboding picture of that world. From death row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. I'm Aura Bogado.
And it's 7... Yeah, haha. You're listening to 99.5 FM WBAI New York. It's 7 p.m. Time for Off the Hook. Good evening, everyone. The program is Off the Hook. We're here in the studio tonight, minus a few characters, but we have with us Jim.
Hello.
Redbird, who's next to me. I believe, have we lost Emmanuel?
Looks like it.
All right.
And Bernie.
Oh, and Bernie. Do we have Bernie with us?
No, Bernie. Bernie went.
All right. Okay, well, Redbird's going to work on the phone there while we start the show. And over here we have Walter.
Hello.
How are you, Walter?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
And then, all right. So a couple of us have just returned from Europe, from the What the Hat conference, in Boxtel in the Netherlands. And I'm sure we have stories to tell about that tonight. As soon as we get Emmanuel on the air, I believe he's in Berlin right now, right?
I think so.
So he'll be able to tell a little about what he's doing out there. But in the meantime, does anyone have any stories we can start with?
Well, yeah, there's a couple of things going on that illustrate our traditional themes. In fact, classic themes from our past.
Mm-hmm.
One of our favorite classic themes, one of the early shows I was ever at, we talked about censorship of websites. And that's still going on. And this is a sort of fascinating twist on it. TELUS, the leading telecommunications company in Western Canada, excuse me, does not usually block websites, except when they're sort of involved. They have a labor dispute going on. The Telecommunications Workers Union is on strike against them. So now, if you're a TELUS subscriber, you can't get the strike site, which is voices-for-change.com. That's a pro-union website for the anti-TELUS telecommunications workers strike. This is apparently the first site that TELUS has actually censored. We used to think Canada was a bastion of freedom when it came to censoring websites, but, gee, I guess the realities of the world have caught up with them.
What does TELUS say about the strike?
TELUS isn't saying all that much as far as can be said. Except that they're concerned for the safety of their employees. Apparently, these sites had managers' pictures and excoriating phrases about them, you know, saying that they were just like, oh, I don't know, white devils and slave owners, and I don't know what they said. I'm just making that up. I thought it sounded good. Anybody else got anything?
All right, well, we still don't have Emmanuel on the line. I'll try to get Bernie. I'm working on that. Joe, how about you tell us about your leg of the trip or what you thought, your comments on What the Heck?
All right. Well, What the Heck was a great conference. I started off in Switzerland, actually, and took a train over. And when I got there, it was wet, to say the least. Most of the nights it was raining. So the field was very wet and soggy, and, you know, most of us woke up in puddles, but... for the most part, it was very fun. Nobody really complained about that, and it was a very friendly environment. And You know, I gave a talk there, so that was definitely cool, and you know, got a good response from that. So overall, it was a great conference. Unfortunately, only two of us here were able to go, but
yeah, it was an exciting conference. Unfortunately, we weren't able to broadcast Off the Hook from there, but we did do an edition of Off the Wall, which aired last night on WUSB and is available on the internet. In which we got to interview some people who were there, including the organizer of the entire conference. So that was a lot of fun. But it was definitely very interesting, a lot of interesting talks, a lot of meeting new people. It was a lot of fun. I had a great time. Mike, who is normally with us on the show, is currently exploring Paris, I believe. So I'm sure he's having a good time. Maybe he'll try to give us a call from there. Who knows? But I guess we'll see.
Unfortunately, we're having a bit of a difficulty with the WBAI phone system, which I'm sure most of you know is very decrepit. But we're doing our best to get Emmanuel on the line, and Bernie as well. So
we're stringing tin cans and string even as we speak. We have people running down to Philadelphia to get the other end of the string to Bernie. More traditional old-time topics that have popped up back on the news. We've talked about the dangers of being found out by your cell phone, and not even by talking on it, by simply having it on. Well, at least this time, someone who seems to be someone who deserves to be caught by their cell phone was caught. One of the suspects in the London bombings, the second set, the ones that survived because the bombs were not that good, was found in Rome because he left his cell phone on. Apparently, with the cell phone on and the fact that his relatives had reported, or rather, they had traced the set of phone numbers that he had called, so the common number to all the phone numbers of interest was his cell phone, and they managed to determine what cell phone was of interest. They started looking at various carriers as to where this phone was, discovered it was in Italy, and discovered that the relative strength between the number of cell towers that he was between was such, and he was closer to one than to the other, so they managed to find him physically in the city of Rome, as opposed to just knowing in what country he was. We've warned you before to keep your cell phones off if you don't want to be found, and this is a case of proof.
What's interesting is that they didn't even necessarily use the eGPS service. They used triangulation with the cell phone towers.
Yeah, that is more primitive, but probably gives you a better answer than trying to get the GPS off the cell phone. That seems a little too high tech to make it a regular feature of the cell phone.
I believe we have Emmanuel on the air. Are you there?
Yes. All these miscommunications aside, you finally called the right number, and here I am.
All right. It's good to hear you.
We
were talking a little bit about the What the Hack conference, and also touching on the fact that you're in Berlin right now, correct?
No, I'm in Warsaw right
now. Oh, you've moved on to Warsaw.
Dzień dobry.
It's part of the whole heading east process.
Right.
Walter has a Polish phrase for you.
Dzień dobry.
What does that mean?
Good day.
Okay, well, I'll be sure to use that tomorrow when I'm struggling at the train station to get out of this country. I've been here for about a day now, and I can only spend 2 days here if I'm going to make it to Moscow in time to meet up with the Trans-Siberian Express. Tomorrow is going to be one heck of a challenge for me because I have to catch a train to Belarus, which is the country directly to the east. What I usually do when I go to these countries is I try to scope out the train station, make sure I have the information I need to get the train the next day. When I went over there today, though, they had no information whatsoever about the train I was supposed to take. I have a ticket. I have a ticket. It says what time the train leaves. It says where it goes to. But there is no information in the station anywhere to verify that such a train exists. And when I finally went up to the ticket people and said, look, here's my ticket. Where is this train? They acted like I had caught them at something and said, oh, yes, you mean the train's from Brussels. And that train apparently isn't listed. It's an unlisted train that I'm getting on tomorrow. So apart from the fact that I'm only going to get a couple of hours sleep, I have to somehow find a train that technically doesn't exist, and it's going to a country where they use the Cyrillic alphabet.
It seems apt. You have an unlisted phone number. Now you have a train that's unlisted.
Well, it's in keeping. So anyway, I'm sorry I missed the discussion about what the heck, because that's something I really wanted to talk about.
There really wasn't much of a discussion. We were trying to sort of vamp for until you got on the line.
Why don't you guys continue, and I'll just jump in when appropriate.
It was wet. That was the discussion.
Yeah.
That's all you can come up with? The guys who were there, that's all you can
think of? It rained, and there were good talks, and there were good people, and it was a lot of fun. It was actually interesting to see the infrastructure of the whole conference. You know, it's sort of like this used to be a field, and then suddenly there was a whole town here, a town of a makeshift town, but a town with a bunch of hackers just hanging out and you know, talking, exchanging ideas. It was a lot of fun. And I believe we have Bernie on the line.
Yes, I'm back.
Everything's working now, finally.
Now, yes. I'm hoping I won't get hung up on again by the WBII phone system. I just got back from London myself here in Philadelphia a few minutes ago after quite an ordeal in the tube, in the underground tube.
What was that about?
Oh, there were security alerts. I had to get back from London. I stopped over in London to see our friend Russell, who gave a great presentation on digital radio systems at What the Hack, great conference. And so I met up with Russell, and then got on the tube to head back. And the tube was closed. The whole district line running out to the airport was shut down to another security scare. And they keep announcing over the PA system, due to events of July 7th, we have to do whatever. So they were advising everyone to take buses. But from central London at rush hour to Heathrow on a bus, I knew there was no way I was going to get back there in time. So eventually they got the tube running again, one stop short of Heathrow, where they're doing construction, and forced everybody on another bus, which only left every half hour. So by the time I got to Heathrow, my plane was already boarded, and I ended up sleeping the night at Heathrow, which was an interesting experience.
Yeah, I was very lucky.
I understand you had some problems at Heathrow as well.
The problems didn't occur to me, or I didn't find out about them until I got to New York. But yes, I did have some problems at Heathrow, in that my luggage did not move from my plane from the Netherlands to my plane to New York. Well, one of the two bags did, which kind of confuses me, but... So I got here, and an hour and a half after I landed, I was being told that, oh, well, your luggage is fine, but it's in London, so you'll get it tomorrow.
It's a coincidence. It must be a theme, because my London is also in London right now. My London. My baggage is in London right now.
But as of now, I have yet to receive my luggage, so I guess I'm not getting it today. I did have the most frustrating experience with the phone system because of this, though. You know those systems that you call nowadays that have the speech, you know, you talk to it, basically. It's very nice, and you have to say, oh, well, my name is this, and I flew into JFK and all that. So I got to call the system because I wanted to find out where my baggage was, because they told me it would come today, and it hadn't yet. And I got to talk through this whole system, and after about 10 minutes, it told me, well, I have no idea where your baggage is, so I'm going to connect you to a real person. So another minute goes by, I hear some music, and then another voice comes on and says, I'm sorry, all of our representatives are busy, please call later. And then I hear a dial tone. So, I mean, I would have liked to have been put on hold at least. It would have been nice.
Right. Well,
if you want rudeness, you can come here to Poland, because I'll tell you, people, especially people who work behind counters, are among the rudest that I've ever met. There was an instance today where I was waiting about 10 minutes for somebody to answer a question for me at the train station, and they just walked away. They treated me like I didn't even exist. That seems to be the default way of doing things here in many circles. There are very nice people, too. I don't want to give the impression that everyone is like this, but it seems to be kind of a holdover. As soon as you cross east of the border in Germany, things change, and you get more of sort of a post-Soviet style of kind of being angry all the time and not being very helpful and being very confusing, too, such as the ordeal I just went through at the train station and the one I probably will go through tomorrow. It's interesting, too, because this is my last night in a country with the Roman alphabet. As of tomorrow, I'm going into a Cyrillic country, and then from there, on to Russia, Mongolia, and China. So, I think I'll probably be looking back fondly on my days in Poland, even though I've been sick. Thanks a lot, Red Hack.
Oh, I'm sorry. The guy on the plane next to me. The guy on the plane next to me afterwards told me I gave him my cold too. So you're not alone.
I'm not going to blame you.
He knew within a couple of minutes that you gave him your cold.
No, he was fine at the beginning of the flight and coughing at the end.
Say red hat.
Whatever you have, you should use it as a weapon because it's really it's potent.
I should go to the government. They might want to use it. Yes, Bernie?
Red hat. I'm not going to blame you for my being sick because it was my own fault for buying a Philly cheesesteak sandwich at the London Heathrow Airport.
Ew.
Yes,
it was really bad. I had to try it. I had to see how close it was. It wasn't even close, and it gave me food poisoning. So I have nausea and headache and temperature, and I thank the London or Heathrow Philly cheesesteak company.
Well, it seems that all of us concur that the conference was wonderful, but the travel afterwards weren't so great.
Speaking of
everything was terrific until a couple of days ago.
Speaking of airport stories, I have a little bit of a funny story that that happened at the gate. And in the Amsterdam airport, there's actually two security checkpoints, one to get into the departure area of the terminal and the other one to actually board your flight. And so at the second check, I was flagged because apparently I was, a single traveler. And they put this neat little sticker, which I took a picture of, on the back of my boarding pass and sent me over to this, very secluded area where they question you and ask you the typical questions, is there any possibility that anyone could have possibly inserted any items into your bag without your knowing, and et cetera, et cetera. And I gave him all the right answers. He said, no, of course not, blah, 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 blah.
It's always possible.
But you don't want to say that because then they'll take you into the real back room and you know what they do there. So anyway, he started continuing along that question line, and he was getting very frustrated because I seemed very happy to answer his questions. And he goes, "Where were you staying?" And I said, I was staying at a friend of mine's house. And he asked me for the name, and I give a name. And he says, "And what's this person's last name?" And I said, "I don't know." And he goes, "Well, how could you possibly consider these people your friends without them knowing your last name, without you knowing their last name?" And I said, "I consider them my friends. I don't know what you're talking about." And he asked for the other person that I was staying with and his name. And I gave a name again. And he's like, "And what's his last name?" And I said, "I don't know. I don't know his last name."
You should have said, "I don't know how to pronounce them," because that's the case with me.
Let me continue. So he goes, "How could you possibly have friends in which you don't know their last name?" And I said, "Well, even if I did know their last name, I wouldn't be able to pronounce it for you, their Dutch last names." And he was very, very frustrated by this. So he took my passport and he took my boarding pass and he brought it over to some other, high-tech security guy. And they had a nice little conversation there. And he came back and he asked me all the same questions again. And at the end, he's like, "Are these questions making you nervous?" And I'm like, "No." And he goes, "Why are you nervous?" And I say, "I'm not nervous. What are you talking about?" And he goes, "What are you thinking right now?" And I'm like, "I'm wondering why you're asking me all these crazy questions." And he goes, "You know why I'm asking you all these crazy questions." He didn't say crazy questions. He said questions. And he's like, "I told you before that this has happened before. There's a possibility that someone could have inserted something into your luggage. And that's why we're asking you these questions." And I said, "Okay. Well, I don't think anybody inserted anything into my luggage." And
Redbird, can I just turn here? This was in Holland. This happened.
This was in the yes, absolutely.
If I might make a point here, when I was actually shocked that the most security on my way back that I encountered was in Holland. I went through three metal detectors with X-ray machines in Holland. I was patted down on the way in on one of them. I mean, it was everywhere else, and even on the way here, moving in and out of the London airport, one time, and they look at your passport. In Amsterdam, it was the most thorough checking ever, and I don't know if they were looking for drugs or terrorists, but they were looking for something.
Right.
I've been searched multiple times in Amsterdam as well, but I've never had stupid questions like that asked.
Oh, they were.
That,
they
kind
were
of, that kind of attitude exhibited.
They were ridiculous questions, and he was getting very frustrated that I was answering them with a nice tone. So his last comment was have a nice flight. And one thing I noticed is that everyone who's in any type of security is looking for eye contact. I think that's one of the reasons why I may not have been flagged, because I was shuffling with papers while I was answering the first question, which is are you traveling alone? And that's at the point at which he put the sticker on my boarding pass and said, "Okay, you've been flagged, go over there." And I wasn't looking him in the eye, but all the other people, all the U.S. customs people, and all the and customs in other countries are always looking you in the eye and looking for that, that you're doing the same to them. It's kind of bizarre, but I didn't realize that until later. So I think that's one of the things that they seem to be looking for anyway.
You also had another challenge when you got back, because your flight actually was stopping at JFK and then going on to Philadelphia. Now, of course, you don't live in Philadelphia. There was no reason for you to get on the second flight. Were you able to get off without a problem?
Yeah, you actually have to get off and go through customs before you can go to get to your other flight. And I didn't really know how that worked before, but it worked perfectly fine because I had an option left, go out of the airport, and right, go to the connecting flight. So I just went left.
Yeah, everybody has to go through customs. They tell you this on the plane many times, even if it's not your final destination. You could be ending up in Canada, and you still have to clear U.S. customs, which I guess means that things that would be legal for you to bring it to Canada will get thrown out in the States.
Right. So it was interesting that, I'm sure I delayed the flight a couple of whatever because I didn't board, but because I had heard people being called before, so-and-so, please board your flight, you're delaying it. So I hope that didn't happen, and if any passengers are listening that had a flight delayed from New York to Philadelphia, I apologize. But
I think that only happens if you have luggage going on the flight.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, like
you had
me.
Carry-on. What was that, Bernie?
I said, yeah, like me, my connecting flight from London to JFK, my bags were supposed to have been put on that plane, but when I didn't get on it, they said they had to take it off again. And the next morning, they said they were going to put it back on the plane to JFK again, the second flight where I wrote standby. But I think to punish me, they didn't put it on that plane, and my bags are still in London. But I did learn an interesting trick. When I got to JFK, and my bags, my big check luggage bag, was not in the carousel. I finally talked to a Homeland Security person or a TSA person. I said, "Who do I talk to if my check luggage is not here?" They said, "Oh, just walk through here." I had my shoulder bag, which was loaded with my stuff, wasn't searched at all. I just walked right out, and that was the end of it. So apparently, if you just say your bag's not there, they send you over to baggage services, and nothing gets searched. It's a crazy system.
I don't know about that. They just might. I actually, my luggage is in London too, so we're friends in that regard. But I think it's just they decide who they want to search at random anyway. I mean, I walked through customs also, and they just took my card. I didn't say that my luggage was missing. I just walked through. So I don't know that it's because your luggage was missing or because they just decided that you weren't bringing any contraband into the States.
I think it's kind of funny that three of us who traveled from here to go to this conference came back without their luggage if you checked it. But you and Bernie and Arseny as well.
Oh, what, Arseny?
I think he was taking home your tent.
Hold on one second. What you're telling me is that Bernie, Arseny, and Red Hack all went through London, and their packages all stayed in London.
They need extra time to search them, I think.
Their bags. For a city that really doesn't like suspicious bags, they're certainly going to go into a lot of trouble to hold on to them, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they might be looking for something. I mean, we were coming from the What the Hat conference. So.
Were you all wearing What the Hats?
You're
wearing
your
What the Hat right
yes,
now.
I was. But
We had all kinds of cool hats that we got at a conference. The conference was great. Let's get back to that for a second. It did rain a bit, but rain is part of the Holland experience. It's just it's an essential part of it. I don't think it dampened anyone's spirits.
No
pun
intended.
Might have given a couple of us colds, but yeah. There were all kinds of talks, all kinds of events. We just hung out in the restaurants and bars that popped up. That Sudanese coffee place was amazing. The bratwurst place and the fries place that popped up, the What the Bar and the Megabit Bar and the Foo Bar and the What the Slack tent as well. There were so many places that I could point to with fond memories. And it's just amazing that you can take a field and just all of a sudden build a community on there, have places that people go, establishments, hangouts, and all of this in the course of a couple of days. It's magic. If you weren't there, this is something to definitely fret about and make sure that you come to the next one.
And there was a great picture that actually made it into a lot of news sources, including CNN.com, that of a bunch of hackers hanging out in hammocks, which I thought was really. I spent like two whole days in those hammocks. Someone had set up this, I guess, sort of artsy thing with a bunch of hammocks hanging from poles, and you could just sit there. There was a switch there if you wanted to get online and lie down with your laptop and do whatever you wanted. It was great.
And there's nothing more relaxing than being in a hammock. In fact, I can tell you that Rop was probably behind that because when we traveled cross-country back in 1990, he brought a hammock with him. And occasionally when I'd be looking for Rop, I'd just see in the distance a hammock stretched between two trees, and that's where he'd be hanging out. So I'm pretty sure this is something that he added to the conference. And it was just basically a hammock farm, maybe about, a dozen or so hammocks all together.
Like that. Yeah.
Very, very artistically arranged.
Yeah. Yeah, there was this whole metal structure they were hanging from that was definitely something that was thought out or design.
Kind of like a mobile, you know, one of those hang mobiles with shapes that float around from the ceiling. But it was all a bunch of hammocks under this very interesting design of a cover. It was sort of like a big four-corner piece of plastic that was bent up at the corners in this really cool-looking three-dimensional design. Just whoever designed this put a lot of thought into it, and it was a lot of fun, too.
One of the really cool things is how many different interests were there. I mean, you could go to one corner of the field, which is a huge field, by the way, and you know, you have a ham radio tent. On the other side, you have some guy with a bunch of telescopes where you can look up at the stars. You go somewhere else and you have a wireless village and all sorts of different wireless technologies there and just all sorts of different interests and their own little community set up in this huge field. So
there was a group of squatters hanging out in the camp field, which was kind of interesting. And they were in a section that I had not visited until, I think, Saturday night. So this goes to show that the place was so huge that, you just start to find your way around, and then you realize there's a whole other section that you hadn't been to. I never made it to the ham radio tent. I never got that far. But there were so many places to visit. You know, the time was just simply, we had 4 days. It went by like nothing.
I got to say that Joe made his, Redbird made his first European contact from the ham radio tent. He spoke with another ham radio operator in Russia, which was pretty cool, from a tent with a 20-meter antenna that was strung up in the trees.
It was very interesting, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. You know, all sorts of different types of technology there to play with, and you know, the phone system there was amazing, the network there was amazing. Everything was working, and nobody was complaining about anything. And you know, if something broke, people actually helped to fix it, and there was none of this craziness that you find at some other places. Yeah. And it was great.
The phone system was something else. I mean, that was. I think we've talked about it before, but basically there's this kind of wireless cordless handset in Europe called the DECT phone. I don't think
it's not here.
Yeah,
you won't find them here.
I don't think the frequencies are allowed here or allocated here.
Well, didn't you guys bring back a couple?
I didn't.
Yes.
Bernie may have.
Yes.
Oh, that you can find them here now.
Yes.
Well, you can't buy them here, but essentially they were used to set up a whole wireless phone network for just the campsite. So that, you know, instead of having to use cell phones and pay exorbitant roaming charges, we could call each other by dialing extensions on this phone system. And it allowed us, though, in the campsite environment to walk around and not worry about if they're in their room or tent or whatever. So it was really great.
And they had this really really cool feature of this system, which allowed you to connect to PBXs all around the world, really. And make international phone calls for no charge at all. It was completely free, and if there was a PBX in your area. And, for example,
you could receive calls, too.
Yeah, definitely. And, for example, 212 was one of the area codes where you can make free phone calls to. And it was just amazing to be able to do this in the middle of a field, in the middle of nowhere, really. I think
the deal was if an asterisk server was running anywhere in the area you were calling, your call would get routed on that asterisk server. And that's how the call would go through for free.
Right, as long as it was part of their network. I'm not sure exactly how it worked, but that's something we should definitely find more about. But the event phone people organize it, so I'm sure you could find all sorts of information
probably
on their webpage.
Yeah, it was amazing.
You could even use your cordless DECT phone, which they sold very cheaply there. You could even use them to control some blinking light displays. The Germans had set up the infamous or famous blinking lights displays of years past, which are big matrices of light. You could actually generate different art displays or play Pong or all kinds of other games using your cordless DECT phone as a control panel for these big matrix lamp displays. And it was just amazing technology that people turned into these creative and fun displays. It was really terrific.
There was a lot of fretting and gnashing of teeth over the fact that we were preempted last week and weren't able to bring you the special program from What the Hack. However, we did do a special program for Off the Wall over on WUSB, and that program is available online. If you go to www.2600.com/offthewall, you can download that and hear what it sounded like on the second day as we did a kind of impromptu circle right out there in the thunderstorm. Where we just interviewed people. And that show was a lot of fun. I must admit, I've never done a radio show out in the rain before, but I think we should do it again.
And if you want to hear what European mud sounds like, that's the show to listen to.
There are all sorts of very interesting background sounds.
Yeah. So.
I'm in the middle of the round the world voyage that I've embarked upon. Actually, the last show of Off the Hook that I did, I was actually on the Queen Mary 2. I've come quite a way since then. I've been in London since then, the campground, Amsterdam, Berlin, and now here in Warsaw. And tomorrow I go to Minsk in Belarus, which is a dictatorship, which is always fun to visit. I kind of wish I was doing the show from there because, you know, to do a show from a dictatorship is always, it drives the ratings up, I think.
And from there, so what else do you have scheduled on your trip for the next couple of weeks? Where are we going to hear you from?
Well, I think next week I'll be at some point on the Trans-Siberian. The Trans-Siberian Express leaves, I think, on Monday. And then on Wednesday I'll be in some eastern Russian town. Now, I'm not sure how we're going to pull this off because I actually will be on the train next week. And I don't know if GSM coverage really will extend out to the Trans-Siberian Express. It might, you know. They might have done a really good job. If it doesn't happen, however, we'll have to use the satellite phone. And I'm not really sure how using a satellite phone on a train is going to work. I might have to stand, you know, hang off the end car or something so that I get a view of the sky that doesn't get obscured by trees or windows or whatever. So it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be good radio, I think.
This show is a true test of technology and its limits.
It's too bad.
It really is.
Too bad you couldn't get an external antenna and sort of stick it on top of the train while you're going and get perfect coverage.
Well, you know, they might take a dim view of that. I'm not sure. But, you know, we'll do whatever we can. So the whole thing here is challenges to somehow make the phone connect every week, which was a challenge this week. And maybe, you know, more of a challenge next week. We'll see. For Off the Wall, the challenge is recording the show and uploading it so it plays as if we're in the studio. And next week I'm going to have to upload the show from Moscow, which I'm not sure how that's going to work. It's fun. It's interesting. It definitely keeps you alert and awake. And, of course, throughout all of this, I'm recording little snippets for the film that were the police are passing by outside. I'm looking out my hotel window right now, and the police are passing by in this big blue van. I'm not sure what's going on. There's a lot of police presence in Warsaw, I'll say. Anyway, so what we're doing is we're recording pieces from individual people with their opinions on all kinds of things that make them angry, things that involve the rest of the world, whether they have a story to tell, whether they have a joke to tell, and it's all being done in the native language of whoever is speaking at the time, and we're calling the film Speakers World. We've gotten quite a number of submissions already in places like London, and of course, What the Hack, Amsterdam, the Queen Mary 2, and I find that it's immensely helpful. Red Hack, you and Arseny were helping out in Amsterdam. It's so much easier to actually approach people when you have a couple of people to help you. So it's harder when I'm in a place like this. It's impossible if I'm sick. I can't really even go outside. But, you know, a place like Belarus, for instance, which is a dictatorship, I don't know if I want to go around approaching people. I might be putting their lives in danger just for having them talk to me. So if you're in any of the cities that I'll be visiting, which right now include Minsk, I really don't think we have any listeners in Minsk, but who knows, I could be surprised, Moscow, Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia, Beijing, Shanghai, and Osaka and Tokyo, please give us a shout. Send us email, oth@2600.com. We'd love to meet up with you, at least get you on camera, and maybe some other people, too, that you might know or that we could accost in the street.
Emmanuel, you're missing an appeal. We probably have listeners who may not be in those cities, but who have friends or relatives in those cities. So email your friends and relatives in those various cities and have them get back to us at OTH.
Of course, one of the barriers that you're probably going to encounter more and more as you travel east is that people will be less likely to speak English. I do know that, I remember that in Amsterdam, most people, we did have a little trouble communicating with some Chinese girls that we interviewed, although I noticed that you did know how to say thank you in Chinese.
That's one of the things I stuck onto for my Chinese course. I can count up to, I think, four. I can say thank you, and I think I can say the word Chinese or something, but that's about it.
But, I mean, the first words out of our mouth usually when we went up to someone was, do you speak English? Because that was the only way we could convey to them what exactly it was that we were doing so that they would, I mean, they may not have spoken in English on the tape, but that way they knew that we weren't just pointing a camera at them and what we'd like them to do is to just say whatever they want. So how do you plan on dealing with that, the fact that they won't actually be able to understand what you're asking of them and what the camera's for?
That's what makes having somebody who's a native almost essential, because it is going to be very difficult. If I can, the irony is that we want them to speak in their native language, but to convey that particular fact to them is very, very difficult, obviously, if they don't speak the language. So we're going to have to look for people that either can speak our language and their language, or just, you know, somehow get the idea across without using words.
Right. All right. Well, good luck to you with that.
It's a challenging film to make. It certainly is.
Yeah. Anyone have any comments?
No.
I guess not.
Emmanuel, so what have you been up to? What have you seen in Warsaw so far?
I've got red hag syndrome here, so I haven't been able to do very much. I've been inside most of the day. I did, you know, take that walk down to the train station and have that little fiasco. And I walked, you know, through the streets a bit. It's a nice town. It's very busy. For some reason, everyone here screeches their tires when they drive. I don't know what that's all about. I've never heard so much car noise as here. It's a big place. It's very hot too. I think the temperature change also isn't helping as far as keeping me from getting sick. And I just, you know, I gotta ask people about this. I went to a store to buy some aspirin. And the aspirin they gave me, I've never seen anything like this. There were two aspirins in the envelope, each one the size of a quarter. And they are the bitterest tasting things I think I've ever had in my life. I almost got sick just by having the aspirin, which I don't think is the point. If anyone knows, did I just get poisoned, or is that what aspirin is supposed to taste like?
Well, aspirin does taste like that. I was a chemistry major, and that's... The proprietary things like buffering, it's proprietary, and also coating the aspirin is also proprietary. So outside of the United States, aspirin is a very bitter substance.
Oh, it certainly is. Hopefully that bitterness will fight my my sickness. And
It's related to the bark of the weeping willow. So imagine that.
I'm imagining it right now.
Yeah, so it's bitter.
I've been getting all kinds of horror reports from people in New York about the subway searches. Now, has anybody in the studio has any first-hand knowledge about this?
I have yet to see a police officer.
Yes. I saw three today.
I haven't seen a police officer either, and I've been on the subways at least four different days each week since it started. So that's, what, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks?
It's interesting. The Port Authority between New York and New Jersey seem to be doing the exact same thing. I took the PATH train today, and there were three stands, and the sign in between the three stands that said all of your baggage is subject to search by Port Authority police. And they were standing there, and it was very funny watching them looking at people coming down the stairs, because this was during rush hour, and the number of people that go into the World Trade Center PATH station at that time is just enormous. Like there's no way they can possibly look at a tenth of the people that are coming down the stairs, and they were just kind of looking. I didn't actually see them pick anybody out, but I'm very curious. Maybe I'll ask one of them sometime what they use as the criteria to pick somebody out.
I have a question. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I'll go ahead then. I just wonder, are they searching people going onto buses? Have they ever heard of, you know, buses being bused?
I've seen film of it on the news, actually, that they've had people, you know, spread their bags open. And supposedly the criteria is that they count off people, and that's the only way that they're doing it. So and this is very anecdotal, I've heard stories of, shall we say, Arab-seeming youth being at stations with not a lot of traffic, but with a search going on, managing to time it so that a number of them go in without being searched and then yell obscene things. And or things to upset the cops, like jihad. But that is very anecdotal, although I've heard it from two sources that I sort of trust.
I don't think that's it. Go ahead, Brian.
Sorry, in the London Underground, Russell mentioned to me that this Thursday, which I guess is tomorrow there, a few hours ahead of us, there is going to be extra, extra, extra security with extra machine guns, with the Metropolitan Police and so forth in the Underground. Because it is apparently exactly a month after the first attacks and exactly 2 weeks after the second set of attacks. So they're, by that logic, they're planning for more attacks, or the authorities are planning to be prepared for more attacks tomorrow in the London Underground. Let's hope it doesn't happen.
Terrorists are just so predictable.
They're that predictable, yes. So
you could set your watch by them.
Yeah, apparently.
Every fortnight.
Although I believe that you know, the police should be honest with the public in general, I think in cases like this where they're predicting that an attack's going to happen, it would be best if they... I mean, I understand maybe people will avoid the subway then, but then I don't think that the terrorists who are planning an attack would, you know, if they knew that their plans had been revealed, I don't think they'd go ahead with it.
I think you have to realize, though, that...
point out, too... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I think you have to realize, though that the whole concept of searching people going into a subway system as large as the one in New York or London is just absurd. I mean, it's not going to work no matter what you try. It's very, very easy to get whatever you want into the subway system.
Well, what's interesting to point out is that in London, they're very open about the fact that they are racial profiling. There's no question that they are going after people of Asian descent, Arab people, people that they suspect might be the next suicide bomber, and I guess Brazilians too. Anyone with brown skin, I suppose, is a possible target. And the vast majority of people seem to support this now, that's on the way to catch these people. In New York, they're saying that they're not doing that, but they are doing it in more subtle ways. What they do is they go to a neighborhood that's predominantly a particular minority that they might suspect. And that way, when they do their random searches, well, you know, the 4 out of 10 that they search all turn out to be within that ethnic group anyway. So they're getting around it in a kind of a sneaky way.
Let me just point out a number of ways in which this is inane. Method number one, you don't need to be on the subways to destroy the subway. Hijack a gasoline truck, dump it down a subway vent. Number two, you don't have to necessarily go to the station you want to bomb that station. The subway station subway system has 468 stations. Every one of them is interconnected. You can ride for 2, maybe 3 hours at the most, and get from any station to another. 3, a lot of terrorists, I'm sure, either own or rent cars. Well, what you do is you and your friends get together, you have your backpacks all ready, you park the car, you go to a station. If they're searching at that station, you go back in the car and you drive to another station until you find one they're not searching people at. Then you go in.
It almost sounds like you had that scripted.
No, but I've been thinking about this for days. It's like, why can't you people think of this?
The other thing,
Jim, is that we're assuming that people only want to target subways. Where is it written that terrorists can only target...
Please don't get me started on that.
They can target whatever it is they want to target. They can target shopping malls. They can target Fifth Avenue. They can target taxis. I don't know. They can target anything. It's, you know, it's a wide open world there. Terrorists have it all, you know. It's only controlled by their imagination, you know. That's the only boundary. It's ridiculous. That's why security things will never work. All you can do is maybe make people think that they're somewhat more secure by the show of force, but it can never have that kind of an effect.
I think the best way to prevent terrorism is to not stoke the fire and not piss the people off in the first place. Obviously, there's a reason that people want to attack us. I think many of us know, I mean, I'm sure one of the reasons is the Iraq War. I don't think that made very many people happy. I'm sure that only ended with more recruits for terrorism. So I don't think the way we're going about it by you know, hunting more people down and shooting people all over the place is the way to solve it. I think it's...
Red Hack, my understanding was that we're involved in all this because they want to take away our freedom, and that's why we're fighting them, because they hate our freedom so much. Isn't
yeah,
that right?
And my argument with Red Hack is that, gee, I thought all this happened big time before the Iraq War, when they flew airplanes into the World Trade Center. We weren't at war in Iraq at that point.
Actually, Jim, that was after the Iraq War. Do you remember the one in 1990?
Yeah, and they wanted to blow up things, according to the people who were caught after the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center, because we support Israel, okay? I don't think we should change our foreign policy because of terrorists, okay? And you know me, I have the other approach. I think that we should nuke the major cities of Saudi Arabia in order to stop terrorism. The point is this, okay? We're not talking about the big picture here. We're here analyzing the little picture. Okay, the local
stuff,
the New York City stuff.
You can say something like that. You can say something like that and then be surprised when people want to destroy things around you.
No, I'm not surprised.
Okay, well, you know, this is the kind of world that we're being led into, and it seems, you know, insane that we're just... Yeah, I don't think terrorism should dictate foreign policy at all. I agree with that. But I think stupidity should not be allowed to run foreign policy, and I think that's what we have right now. And that's why it has to be stopped, not because of the terrorists, because of the people, because the people think that this is not a good idea, and it's hurting us.
Well, that's a different argument.
All right. Do you want to take some phone calls, Emmanuel?
Might as well. Might as well see who's out there. You know, I had some stories to read and some letters to read, but I guess we can do that later.
I mean, if you have anything you want to get into, now's the time before we start.
Well, I think we've already gotten into it, but but let's see what the listeners have to say, because we haven't heard from them in a couple of weeks.
All right. So if you'd like to call in, the number is 212-209-2900. And, oh, no. Sorry about that. And good evening. You're on the air. No, you're not. I hate this phone system. And good evening. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Well, one thing I heard on the news is that the constitutionality of the random searches or whatever they are going on in the transit system can be challenged in the courts, and if it's not found to be effective, then it won't be found. It will be found not to be constitutional, based on the Fourth Amendment or whatever. If it's not effective, it won't pass constitutional muster. So if they can't show that this actually helps, and it sounds as if they won't be able to show that.
I don't know about that. I mean, you know, if shooting people helps, you know, if shooting innocent people like they did in London, if they can prove that somehow makes terrorism wane, I think that would be ruled as something that's acceptable. You know, I think there's a certain acid test that's performed, and it's got nothing to do with, you know, effectiveness.
It is something I heard on the news, and they're saying because, you know, normally you can't just search people because it's an unreasonable search under the Constitution.
I think there's really no need to prove that it's ineffective, because it really isn't. Well, there's an echo there, but I mean, you can keep in mind that you can always say no, you can't search me, and walk out of the subway. You can try going back into the same subway station, and they probably won't see you. If they do see you, you can walk a couple of blocks and go to another subway station. So I'd like to hear
what happens to people who do that, because I've heard from two of them so far, and both cases the cops made some kind of snide remark, which I imagine was designed to get some kind of response back, and then maybe, you know, extend the conversation a little further and lead to God knows what.
Right, because you can
be very careful dealing with police.
You can be searched for cause, and obviously if the cop says something that makes you say something suspicious, you can then be searched.
Right. Legally, they can't search you without probable cause, but in this case, riding the subway isn't actually a right of yours and mine, so they can deny you that service.
Right. So just be careful when you're talking to the police. Don't get snippy with them. Don't get frustrated. Just say, you know, if you don't have a warrant and you don't have probable cause to search me, then I really don't agree with this.
And then just walk away.
Yes.
All right.
To the next station and get on the same train.
Right. All right. Let's take another phone call. And good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, I think Manuel is taking Evervescent tablet orally. You should have put it into a glass of water.
That could be the case.
That's possible.
Oh, you know, I never thought about that.
Yeah, they do have, in Europe, a lot of aspirins are in effervescence tablets, yeah.
Did it foam up in your mouth?
I think it might have, actually. That's why I was so concerned.
So that's why they think you have rabies.
Mystery.
What do I do now? I've already swallowed.
Drink a lot of water.
What happens if I don't drink a lot of water?
You're going to swell up like a balloon, Emmanuel.
Oh, my God.
You feel really bloated right now?
Well, I will.
Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, feel better.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
All right. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi.
Hey, I don't mean to sound paranoid, but I would think, and I'm not going to ride the subway at all if I don't have to, because I don't want to deal with it at all after this bag search thing. But I would think that if you go upstairs, I refuse a search, they're going to call your description in, and you're probably going to be followed and tracked in some way.
I don't see that much.
Keep in mind, they have cameras, and they'll have more cameras too. That's one thing. That the attacks of the 7th and the 21st have proven to the world, I guess, is that surveillance cameras are great things to have, because you can find people that way. So expect to see those all over the place. But I find it really interesting that people are avoiding the subways, not because of the threat of terrorism, because of the threat of being searched.
Yeah.
Emmanuel, was that a tank of the Polizei coming for you, or are they just scrubbing the streets at whatever hour?
No, I'm at the window of my hotel, and there's a lot of traffic going by. As any street in Warsaw, there's a lot of traffic.
What hour is it there?
It's 1:49 in the morning. And, you know, it's horrible because I have to be up very early to catch this train to Belarus.
And there's traffic?
Which hopefully exists.
So now,
there's always traffic.
Warsaw is the capital of Poland? It's the capital, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes, I believe that's the capital.
Is there any form of mass transit? Because the fact that there's so much traffic, is there mass transit as well, or is it just that people can only get around by car?
Oh, there are buses. There's a subway. I don't think they're running this late, but there's always activity.
That's the one thing about subways in other countries. They never run past, you know, a certain hour, whereas here in New York, they're 24 hours. They kind of take that for granted.
Yeah, I missed that.
All right.
Let's take another call.
Right. And good evening. You're on the air. Nope.
I missed that.
Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah,
hello.
Hi.
Turn down your radio, please.
Yeah, I turned it off. I think Emmanuel should maybe look up U.S. Embassy wherever he goes and get some advice on how to talk to people in English, you know, like who the locals are and the people most likely to speak English somewhere. And the other thing is, I just want to say I've been recently exposed to all of the work you guys done over the years and hacking, and you know, I'm a sysadmin and for a while now, and just want to thank. I think you guys have done a great job, and the show's awesome.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much,
Emmanuel. That's an interesting idea that you go to the embassy. People looking for visas may be able to understand your English.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't tend to really get along with embassies very well, but also the fact is, we're not looking for people that speak English. We're looking for people that are native to the country, that know people in the country. And yeah, I guess if I can find somebody who speaks English who knows a lot of people in the country already who are natives, that would be a good thing. I'm just hoping that our listeners will come forward, and that we already heard, believe it or not, from somebody in Mongolia that listens to the shows. So they are out there. So please write to us. You can definitely make a big difference. Russell, in fact, who Bernie visited in London, was one of those listeners. He listened to Off the Wall, met me at Speaker's Corner, and we hung out, did some interviews, and again hung out at What the Hack, and
hopefully we'll see him at Hope too. So
we'll see him at Hope. Yeah, yeah. It's great. This is how you develop long-term friendships with people from all over the world, just by listening to the show and meeting up with us when we pass through your neck of the woods. So, again, I'll be in Minsk tomorrow and the next day, Moscow after that, then the Trans-Siberian, eventually winding up in Ulaanbaatar, then on to Beijing, Shanghai, Osaka, and Tokyo. And then I'm taking a freighter across the Pacific Ocean. I don't expect to see anybody there, but if you're in the Pacific Ocean at the time, you know, feel free to send up a flare or something. I'd love to see it.
All right, should we take another phone call?
Yeah.
Sure.
And good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, good evening. I have a question. The person who said, who was the one who said that the problem is happening because we're antagonizing the terrorists, we went into their country, we started a war? Who
would be me.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Do you actually...
Hello?
We wouldn't, hello, yeah, I'm here. Hello?
Breaking up, can you...
Yeah, you're fading in out.
Yeah, it's T-Mobile. What can I do? can you hear now?
Yeah.
It's better.
Mm-hmm.
We can hear you now.
You know, about 60 years ago, the Jews in Germany said, "You know, let's stay quiet. Let's not antagonize these people. It will just blow over. Nothing will happen." And you know what happened?
Sure.
6 million people died.
Don't you believe there's a difference? Don't you believe there's a difference in justification for one fight over another? That was a legitimate fight. That was something you'd be a fool not to get involved in. Same thing about Bosnia and the Kosovo situation, in my opinion. Now, this is nonsense, and I like to use a different word than nonsense, but to be sacrificed, we lost 14 Marines today. That's insane. And for
it
what?
It is insane.
For what?
You know why? Because I was born in Israel. I came here when I was 12. And I know Arabs a lot better than American Arabs. And the problem is, if you give them an inch, they would want a whole yard. If you give them a finger, they would want a whole hand. You can't. It's a different mentality. You're thinking with an American mentality. You're thinking about totally different things in this world from what they are thinking. And you cannot take that way of Western type of thinking and apply it to an Arab. because they do not think like you.
That just sounds like racism to me.
You think so?
You're
that's
an adult,
the
racist.
You know what it is? That's the problem with America. That's the problem with liberals in America, where they think I am racist. But what's going to happen 20 years from now is there's not going to be...
You just categorize an entire group of people. You just categorize an entire race. So, yeah,
categorizing terrorists. And you know what? I go on the subway, and if they want to search me, I have no problem with it. You know why? Because I'm not a terrorist. If they want to check my bag, go ahead and check it. Why should I care?
I'll bet they won't.
I look Middle Eastern. I have dark hair and dark skin. And if when I go to Israel on El Al flights, they actually talk to me and ask me questions because I don't look Israeli, I look Middle Eastern. And you know what? I always laugh and say, thank you for asking me a question, because that's what they do. They don't come up to you and say, are you a terrorist? They come and say, hey, how you doing? What's your name? Because they want to listen to the way you talk. There is a lot of different ways of finding out who is a terrorist, and by just talking to somebody, it's not only searching. This is the problem here. America doesn't know how to work against terrorism. It takes time. Israel's 40 years experience.
Right. Unfortunately, we're out of time. That's
fine.
It for the hour. So,
you know, one other thing I just want to close on is that there are many definitions of terrorism, too. And I think that's something else that this caller should look at.
Right. Well, perhaps we'll call back next week and we have more in-depth discussion. But for this week, that's it for Off the Hook. And the Personal Computer Show is up next. See you all next week.